This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
It's time for the Brian Roos Show on Revolution Radio, coming to you from beautiful Vancouver, Canada. Brian and his guests talk about the big picture, the world view of reality with good and evil. They explore the truth and lies from aliens to globalists to advanced ancient civilizations.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know. It's fun though, isn't it?
Welcome to the Brian Roos Show on Revolution Radio on Tuesday, December the 27th, 2022. So if you'd like to phone in to the Brian Roos Show with a question or comment, now is your chance. I'll give you the phone number. You can call it now or at the top of the second hour. The phone number is 603-635-4946. And today had a meeting of the Thule Society on Zoom with four members, and I announced today, first time publicly on Revolution Radio, I'm resigning from the Thule Society. I'm the founder and president for 7 years. I founded it actually on this day tomorrow in 2015. The Thule Society, so my reasons for resigning, the Thule Society, I should first say it's on the website, we're at ThuleSociety.com, T-H-U-L-E, Society.com. And we take a spiritual interpretation of Adolf Hitler as a chancellor who is greater than just a really intelligent leader, but he has some spiritual capacity. The reason why I'm resigning, one reason is that most of my time now is in the UFO community. I'm interested in extraterrestrials, the agenda for human advancement. And it's a problem for my guests. They don't want to be on my show or with my meetup, Prepare for Online Contact. They say, well, Brian, you're hate-filled, anti-Semitic, Nazi, white supremacist, racist, you see? So it's just better if I distance myself more. Also, spiritually, my Theravada Buddhist beliefs are combining with the gray aliens and their higher spiritual development. So I'm going in this direction, which doesn't really relate to the Thule Society. So I felt the Thule Society should have a better full-time president. So I'm announcing I chose Jeff Doherty in Kansas. If you look up Jeff Doherty, Doherty is D-A-U-G-H-E-R-T-Y. He's got his own show on Rockfin like five nights a week. So he's got his own radio and video show. He's a former minister. He's reached, you know, millions of people. He's got the right attitude towards the Great One, the Chancellor, the Fuhrer, and the Jewish issue. So I think he can carry it a lot further. He said today in our meeting, he said he could do a video show like every week, and he could do blogs for a website. So I'm very, very happy I selected him as our as my successor as a president. So I think the next 7 years would be better than the last 7 years of Phil's side. He can actually take it to the next level. So I'll be making a written statement for our mass email list and for the website as well. But we happen to meet today at 9 a.m. Right now it's 3 p.m. in Vancouver. So the meeting was just 6 hours ago. We met for an hour and 10 minutes. So this is my first interaction with the public in the last 5 hours. So I'm announcing it now. It just happened today. So I feel good about that. I can focus my energies more to where I'm going. And Jeffrey Doerr is going to do a great job as president of the Thule Society. So what I'd like to talk about today is I just interviewed Simon Roche, which is he's becoming a favorite here on my Revolution Radio show. This is called Americans Launching an Attack from Russian Soil. We talked for an hour and 20 minutes, so I'll play that for you first about the latest developments going on with the Ukraine war. And also we have the interpretation of the prophecies of World War III by Nicholas von Rensburg. We've had videos going back 2016 about that. Then after that, I'll talk a bit about the UFOBC.ca website. I was an associate member of UFOBC from 2009 to 2014. It's a local UFO organization here in British Columbia, Canada, where I live. Okay, so having said that, I will carry on with my share screen and share sound, and I will play the talk by Simon Rush, called Americans Launching Attack from Russian Soil. Holy smokes, crossing to the border, sneaking in, and launching rockets against Russians from Russia.
Welcome to the Brian Rush Show. It's December the 22nd, 2022, and just 15 days ago, I had Simon Rush on from the Saitlanders. He's in South Africa. Please donate. Their website is saitlanders.org. Link below this video. And Simon sent me an email about American weapons onto Russian soil, because we're very concerned since 2016. We've been making videos about the prophecies of World War III by the signer, Nicholas von Rensburg. Please donate. Their website is safe. We have to have an update from Simon. Good to have you back, Simon.
Thank you very much for having Saitlanders back on your show, Brian. We appreciate it very much, as we have always done. Since we first appeared on your show in late August or early September of 2016.
Yeah, we go back a long ways, more so than virtually any of my guests, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, you probably go back further than any of my guests.
Mm. Well, yeah, Brian, shall I just kick off? Shall I talk about
yes.
the things that we were talking about?
Yeah, it's important stuff.
The preamble or foreword to this conversation is to remind people that the war in Ukraine goes back a long way. It goes back to 2004 when Viktor Yanukovych's success in the presidential elections of that year was declared null and void by the international observers. And then in 2007, Vladimir Putin gave a speech at the Munich Security Conference that every single person who wishes to have an opinion on the Ukrainian war must watch. You can't begin to address this subject without understanding or without being familiar with Vladimir Putin's initial warnings to the West. Right at the beginning, what did he say? And it's a brilliant speech to watch. And then we had 2013-14 when Viktor Yanukovych, the same Viktor Yanukovych, two elections later, he wins. He becomes the president. He withdraws from treaties or agreements with the European Union. He pivots back to Russia. And he's then deposed in a coup d'etat that is instigated by the United States State Department and the CIA. This is now well known, well understood, and serious observers don't bicker or quarrel about it. For 8 years, there was some kind of friction in the Donbas or fractiousness, or even there was conflict. There was hostility. The Russians were involved. They denied being involved. NATO was involved directly and indirectly. They too denied being involved. One way or the other, the Donbas wished to secede. And they approached Russia in 2014 to do just that. And Russia said, under no circumstances will we allow you to secede from Ukraine and to accede to Russia. And so things carried on until the erection of a series of bioweapons laboratories along the Russian-Ukrainian border, on the Ukrainian side, of course. And there have been many reports about these bioweapons laboratories. They were US, NATO, and EU funded and sponsored. This is beyond dispute. It is well known, well understood, and well recorded. And at the same time, or in fact prior, we're now talking 2020, 21, and the first months of 2022. In historical terms, the immediate prelude to the beginning of hostilities. And I'm not going to give a date for that because we'll come to what might be the truer date. These bioweapons laboratories were built and Ukraine simultaneously was making efforts, reciprocated efforts, it should be pointed out, to join NATO and the European Union, both of which horrified Russia, because during the breakup of the Soviet Union, the United States of America and NATO gave explicit assurances that they would not expand eastward. It's a bit like this. You and I may say, as fellow residents of the same village, we absolutely respect one another's sovereignty. We deem one another sovereign, paters familias, to use the old Roman term. As men, you are the head of your family. You have every right over them. So do I. What crops I grow in my little garden, what pets I keep, the same with you. Who you love, who you marry, how you bring up your children is entirely your own business. You are sovereign. Ukraine is sovereign. However, the moment that you start keeping, for instance, black mambas in the trees of your garden, uncaged, I believe that I am entitled to an opinion on that. The moment that you rent out your garage as a storage space for class one chemicals, I don't know, cyanide or something, I believe I am entitled to have an opinion on that.
Yeah.
And so it was that the West understood Russia's concerns about the eastward expansion of NATO. Russia drew a line in the sand, and that line was ostensibly respected by the West. American presidents gave explicit undertakings on this matter. We will not make you feel threatened. We will not make you insecure by expanding NATO eastward. We will not have missiles, NATO missiles and NATO forces and what have you in countries like Poland, Hungary, Bulgaria, Romania, Czechoslovakia, which is now obviously split, Yugoslavia, which is also, of course, now split. And they promptly reneged on those promises, which was a source of deep insecurity to Russia. The notion that the NATO would expand continually eastward up to Russia's borders with no buffers in between was horrifying. Just as I would be horrified if you, right next to me, right next to the wall between our two properties, did something that threatened my safety and security and the welfare of my kith and kin. So by late 2021, Russia had reacted to these turns of events, the Donbass drama, EU, NATO, the whole lot together, by amassing a large force on Ukraine's eastern or northeastern borders, borderlands. By the way, the word Ukraine means borderlands. That is the meaning of it.
Well, I didn't know that's what Ukraine meant. Holy smokes.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, that's why it's not as much of a misnomer as people make it out to be. You know, these grammar Nazis who can barely string a sentence together. When people say the Ukraine, it has an origin. Because colloquially, in the Russian, it was the Ukraine. In Russian, they wouldn't say Ukraine, they would say the Ukraine, because it was a colloquial and idiomatic way, the borderlands, the historic borderlands. So there may be an error, but the error originates in the idiomatic Russian references to Ukraine. It's almost instinctive that you throw in the definite article, because the proper noun is originated from an ordinary noun. Okay. So we spoke about 2020, 2021, these events coming to a head. In 2022, the 16th of February, Ukraine launched a series of shellings upon two provinces. They call them in Slavic languages oblasts. But the word is not very different to province. It's similar to the word county, but county has always been a little bit of a smaller thing. It's more akin to the word province. The recalcitrant provinces in the Donbas. Donbas, for those people who don't know, comes from, it's a contraction or an abbreviation, if you like, almost an acronym of Don River Valley Coal Basin. Don River Valley Basin. And these recalcitrant provinces that were trying to exit the Ukraine and had been doing so since 2014 because they're Russian speaking and they've been persecuted. Russian had been banned, Russian as a language, not to be taught in schools, this, that, the next thing. These provinces were sick and tired, had enough, didn't want to be part of the Ukraine, wanted to join Russia. Vladimir Putin said no. And so we had the 8-year-long civil war in the Donbas.
Do you know why Putin didn't allow them to join Russia? Was it just too much pressure from Ukraine?
It was. he didn't want to make matters worse than they already were.
Yeah,
he didn't want to get involved in that politics. It's well and good that you want to come home, but really, it's going to bring a whole bag full of trouble with it if you secede.
So he seems to have been quite a reasonable political leader since 1999 then.
There are no two ways about it, Brian. No two ways about it. If you go to the trouble of watching the many speeches that he has given, such as at the Munich Security Conference and others, there is no question that he has been patient, to put it mildly.
Oh, but Simon, I saw a speech by Henry Kissinger saying, oh, Putin has this fantasy of the great Russia, the Soviet Union. He's got this megalomaniac idea that he wants to take over the Soviet Union, I guess.
Well, it may be the case. It may be the case.
I don't think so. I think Henry Kissinger is an actor.
Yeah, Henry Kissinger can't be trusted as far as you can spit a book draw.
Also, Henry Kissinger cannot be that stupid, not Henry Kissinger.
No, he is cunning, shrewd, and clever. He has manipulated the world. You know, it was Henry Kissinger's doing that the petrodollar was ever created.
I think, not to go off on a tangent, I think Henry Kissinger actually decided to get rid of Nixon with Watergate. I think Henry Kissinger was behind that.
Yeah. Anyway, the long and the short of it is that Vladimir Putin amasses these huge forces, or Russia amasses these huge forces. On the 16th of February, Ukraine bombs the Donbass, bombs the hell out of it. 8 days later, Putin enters the Donbass to rescue Donetsk and Luhansk. If anybody's wondering, when they read these names, a K is pronounced as we pronounce a K in the Latin alphabet. A K with an H is pronounced. So if you read about the Great Khan, it should be pronounced the Great Khan.
Well, thank you.
Luhansk, and so on. And as, again, purely as a matter of interest, for those people who are wondering whether it is Kharkiv or Kharkov, it's a very, very, very flat vowel, as we English speakers from South Africa. And if you know English speakers from the former Rhodesia, we pronounce our vowels very flatly. And therefore, English writers of these Slavic names, such as Kharkiv, have vacillated between an I and an O. It is the flattest of O's, verging on an I. That's the reason. Kharkiv, Kharkov, they're one and the same. Depending upon who the original translator was of some source that is now being quoted, you know, translator of some work. And on the 24th, Vladimir Putin went in to rescue the situation. Now, I know that that is a long-winded forward, but if your viewers can understand that, they can then understand what we are meant to discuss tonight, namely the key events of the past few weeks, which I put it to you are of the most utterly ominous portent. But before I go on, I just want to say as briefly as possible, I'm going to pull out three or four examples so arbitrary that they are almost random of similar events to the key events of tonight's conversation, similar ones that have occurred prior to the events of tonight's conversation since the 24th of February. One is the blowing up of the four pipes of the Nord Streams 1 and 2. Nord Stream 1 is two pipelines. Nord Stream 2 is two pipelines. Why two and not three? I don't know. I had nothing to do with the design. But Nord Stream 1 is two pipelines. Nord Stream 2 is two pipelines. And those four pipelines were sabotaged 6 months ago. And private Western boffins, ordinary people, in a sense ordinary, immediately leaked the information that a flotilla of US ships was in the vicinity at the time of that sabotage attack, just kind of hanging around. The Russians said, let us work together with the sovereign states through whose territory the pipelines run at the point that they were sabotaged. And with NATO and with the EU and with the United Nations and with the Americans, everybody will get to the bottom of this. And everybody said, no.
Well, what's wrong with that? I mean, everybody wants to get at the truth, right? Shouldn't they work together?
The destruction of two of the most valuable civil engineering projects in the history of mankind. I don't say they are the most valuable, not necessarily in the top 10 or even top 100 if you consider the wonderful marvels that mankind has produced to better his welfare from the time of, I don't know, the proto-Egyptians. But still, two civil engineering projects of the utmost import, providing heating and energy for cooking to all of Western Europe. Lo and behold, the Swedes said, don't worry, we'll conduct an investigation. About 6 weeks ago, 6 or 7 weeks ago, it came out from the Swedes. They said, we've conducted the investigation. We know who did it, but we're not going to tell anybody.
You know, those evil Russians probably did it, and they don't want to hurt their feelings, I guess.
Yeah. So then there was an attempted, but very much a failed, attempt. It was scarcely an attempt to blow up the Turk Stream pipeline. Then the British, and this is now pretty much a matter of consensus among serious observers. Those of your viewers who follow the more serious sources will be aware that there's no disputing this. The British blew up the Kerch Bridge between mainland Russia and Crimea. An act of phenomenal provocation. We also had in between the assassination of, I'm trying to think of the girl's first name, Dugina, Alexander Dugin's daughter, the journalist. And the consensus, again, amongst the most serious observers, and anybody can verify this, is that successful murder of that woman by the Ukraine special agent duties, the James Bonds of Ukraine, could not have been successfully perpetrated without the assistance of and the imprimatur of, that is to say, the blessing of NATO, at least in the form of the Americans. Because the
so
Americans
that could contribute to World War III, a nuclear war. All of this is contributing to this.
Yeah. Aria Dugina, I believe is her name. Right. Which brings us to the topic of tonight's conversation, that series of events. About, what is it now, 2.5 weeks ago, two and a half weeks ago, there was an attack on two very important Russian airfields in the southwest of Russia and one not far from Moscow. Engels Air Force Base, obviously named for Friedrich Engels, the socialist, Marx and Engels fame.
Oh, gosh.
And
oh, nice.
Ryazan Air Base and an air base near to Moscow. It has since turned out that there is strong evidence that the attacks were not conducted by Ukraine. Initially, the understanding was that the Ukrainians had done them, perpetrated those attacks. But since then, let us call them the scientists of such things have said, for various technical reasons, it couldn't have been because they don't have that, and they couldn't have done it from there because of that reason. And, you know, it's like having a preconception about a murder or a crime or some political event, and then some very clever guy comes along and he gives a totally different interpretation, and you learn something. Apparently, these attacks, which were by old Soviet drones, large, cumbersome, primitive by today's standards, technology drones, proto-drones, from the earliest days of drones in the 1970s and 80s, the drones were flown as bombs, effectively, and they had to have been modified. And that part, most parties still agree upon. Where the disagreement, or where the new thinking has come in, is in who did it. And people have said, well, it's the Ukrainians. They've got their old Soviet dronies. And then the clever guys have come in and said, no. It couldn't have been Ukrainians for X, Y, and Z reasons. And there is evidence that it was, the term that they're using is small special task teams. And apparently the drones, so we're talking about special teams from the West, as it would have had to have been and was almost certainly a highly specialized, highly trained British team that blew up the Kerch Bridge, and as it was almost certainly a highly specialized, highly trained American or NATO team that blew up, or teams that sabotaged Nord Streams 1 and 2. What we're learning now from people like Colonel Douglas McGregor and Scott Ritter and I can't think of the other chap's name now, is that it was teams from whatever NATO background or American, whatever, working from on Russian soil. In other words, these drones, so we are discovering, could almost certainly not have been launched so far into Russia as they did go from outside Russia. They had to have been launched from within Russia in order to go so deep into Russian territory.
So how do you explain that? Was it the, well, you tell me.
Well, as Colonel Douglas McGregor has said, Russia's border is a phenomenally long border. He said the gaps in that border have always been terrific. He said what deterred people from escaping freely from Russia to the West was the punishment as opposed to the lack of opportunity. People knew, of course, you had the border guards everywhere, and it was very dangerous. But when you've only got, let's say, just use a number, one man per mile, well, that's not, you know, there's a gap there, isn't there? But you knew that if you got caught, you'd be shot stone dead. And he said that it's his opinion that what's happened is that NATO has used bordering countries bordering Russia that are now part of NATO or are in any case not beholden to Russia, not allies of Russia, to kind of sneak in there and hang around in the forests for a day, a week, a month, who knows long, how long, and then sneak over the border, knowing full well that it's not the most tightly guarded border in the world simply because it's so damn long. The world's largest country stretches across 11 time zones.
Holy
Even God. A country as phenomenally large as the USA has at most 5 time zones.
Well, Canada, we're a bit bigger than the USA, actually.
How many times are, yes, you are bigger, of course.
I think it's
how
four and a half or something.
Okay.
Well, I think it's 4.5 hours difference to Newfoundland from here.
Okay. But even the USA only in practice uses three time zones, Eastern, Central, and Standard. Everybody overlooks the fact that there is a theoretical Arizona time and there is Mountain time. Then there's Alaska time and Hawaii time. And, of course, the Alaskans and the Hawaiians use those times. So you could say that there are seven time zones. But, you know. Okay. So this is what the clever guys are saying. They're saying that there's no ways those drones could have flown that far. They had to have been launched from Russian territory. And that that is not the most preposterous suggestion. It's quite a feasible thing for a small team in a remote area in the Caucasus Mountains, for instance, to, you know, sneak over and do something like that is eminently possible. Now we come to the real point of this story. And I put it to you, Brian, that this is one of the most grave subjects that you and I, or perhaps there's a better way of putting it, one of the most grave topics that you and I will ever cover. Those attacks did very little harm to their intended targets. I think the total death toll was 3. And the damage to the targets was slight. But it is the nature of the targets and the very audacity of NATO / Ukraine / America as something of an independent actor over and above NATO. And that was one leg of Russia's nuclear triad in the form of the Tupolev 95 long-range strategic bomber fleet. It is, or it was an act far more close to the bone, if that's the right expression, than anything we've seen in recent years. And that includes the attacks, the sabotages of the Nord Stream pipelines. And it includes the provocative erections of the numerous bioweapons laboratories, which nobody seems to be certain may range in number from something like 11 to, I saw somebody write quite well, alleging that the number was in the 30s. They said, if you count this and you count that and you don't forget this and you don't overlook that, and you remember that such and such a supplier was supplying X to Y, therefore they should be counted as number 12 or whatever in the 30s. But striking at Russia's nuclear triad is beyond provocative, beyond antagonistic, beyond goading. And that was not done in the spirit of ignorance. We may be stupid enough to believe that it was just another day at the office. But those who planned and executed those attacks knew full well that what they were doing was tantamount to a potential provocation to World War III.
But do you think the people who are like launching the attacks on Russian soil, do you think these were Americans?
Oh, most certainly. There's no way that Ukraine, being so subordinate to the USA and NATO as it is, being a lapdog of those countries, being utterly dependent upon them, you know, the countries implied by NATO, that Ukraine would have dared do something like that. And as I say, the best experts are suggesting that Ukraine just lacks the wherewithal It has the ability to wage war. It has special forces. It has this. It has that. But at the end of the day, it's highly improbable that they possess the wherewithal to carry out such brilliant operations with all of the logistics involved, all of the targeting involved, and definitively, Ukraine does not possess the targeting ability. That is definitive. That's known and understood. It has old Soviet drones. It has men. It has motive. It has opportunity. It has explosives. It can build wars. It can do whatever, but the targeting capability, it does not possess.
Well, that's very significant then, because they're thinking people won't look into those details. I appreciate you looking at those details. I'm thinking if President Trump didn't have the election stolen from him in 2020, President Trump wouldn't be going along with this.
No, because it's a hellish provocation. Excuse me. nobody is suggesting that by definition it was an intolerable provocation, that now Vladimir Putin is going to press the red button and he's going to launch Yars missiles, SS-28 missiles against NATO and the USA. But what we are saying is that is tantamount to provoking World War III, potentially. Possessed the potential. I don't know at what point you will lose your temper with me in a dispute in a bar and punch me. I don't know. Is it at the point where I insult you? Is it at the point where I insult your girlfriend? Is it at the point that I insult your family? Is it at the point that I throw beer in your face? I don't know. But any one of those actions possesses the potential to provoke you to put me in a place, to put me in my place with a great big flat hand across my ear.
That's because I want you to strike me, so I have an excuse to, I guess, pull out a gun and kill you, I guess.
That's it. That's what the more sober-minded observers are concluding. That this is that the deep state and those who own the deep state in the West are hell-bent on provoking a World War III, but they're endeavoring to do it in such a manner that they maintain the moral high ground. Now, they certainly don't maintain the moral high ground in your and my eyes, Brian, but in the eyes of the average consumer of MSNBC, BBC, Sky News, and so on, the Russians are the baddies and the West and Ukraine are the goodies. And so in the mainstream media and in the mind of the Westerner, the average Westerner, the moral high ground is maintained. But imagine being Vladimir Putin, sitting behind that desk and hearing, for those who don't know, the phrase nuclear triad refers to the capabilities possessed, the three-way capability to defend or attack by nuclear means that is possessed by those countries who have land-based nuclear weapons, sea-based nuclear weapons, that is to say in submarines, and air-based nuclear weapons.
You mean space-based nuclear weapons?
No, not space-based. Air-based, like long-range strategic bombers.
But what about space-based, satellite-based nuclear weapons?
I don't know that there are any nuclear weapons in space. I know of that, I think it was 3 years ago, that for the first time ever, 4 years ago, the Americans launched into space an animal, as it were, not a literal animal, that is just an enormous chunk of, I think it's titanium. And it's called a kinetic something, something, something. And the principle of that thing is that it would be released from its carrier in space, and that sheer gravity would allow it to plunge to Earth without breaking up like a comet would, and would strike Earth with such... People can look it up. They'll find it without struggling too much. Kinetic something. It would strike the Earth with such force that it would destroy an enormous area. But nuclear weapons in space as such, not as far as I know.
Well, they're certainly not going to tell us if they have them in space. So we could assume maybe. But, I mean, there could be a secret space program on both sides. They're getting higher and higher. But I just want to comment, like, you're talking in this video on one level, but you and I did two videos called Putin is likely a globalist actor in a World Wrestling Federation act. So from that higher perspective, that Putin has been going along, like you said, okay, you got this great job in 1999. We're making you president of Russia, but we're going to need your help in the future to get Woolworth, and you've got to go along with this. So if you and I had the view that pretty much every single politician, they're all on the same team, Rothschild, reading from the same script, and Putin is just as guilty as everybody else, how do we interpret this? This is just an act playing itself out, like Shakespeare, since February 24th, 2022, right?
Yeah, that's my opinion. And
that's my opinion, yeah.
Yeah, it's my belief. Because, as I said to you, Brian, you know, we're both of an age. You're a little bit older than I am, although you look 10 years younger.
Oh, wow.
We've had enough experience of cigarette lighters, women, peaches. I'm thinking of a yellow cling peach.
Yeah, we got them in Canada. We got women and cigarette lighters. I got experience with all of them.
Clouds. Little blue jays. Shopping centers. You name it. In all of our life experiences, the level of accidental coincidence in which we are supposed to believe in these events doesn't exist. It doesn't exist with computer mouses. It doesn't exist with pens. It doesn't exist with... But we're made to believe that all of this is one phenomenal accident. That is not coordinated and orchestrated. And I say to those of your viewers who may be skeptical, who may think, no, golly gee, this just really is an accident.
It's just conspiracy theory you're coming up with here.
Yeah. Consider using the principle qui bono, whom does it benefit? How every single action taken by European leaders thus far in this conflict has benefited Russia. I'll give you some time, as much time as you like, while I straighten out the papers on my desk. Trust me, there's not enough time in life. Look, people will say, yeah, but what about the sanctions? Look at the sanctions. It is the sanctions that allowed Russia to generate in the first 3 months $11.9 billion more from its gas and oil sales than it would otherwise have done. It is the sanctions that allowed Russia and China to take the first practical steps beyond theory in setting up their own, beyond the theory and setting up and what have you, in activating their own SWIFT system. It is the sanctions that provided the hips to it, we call it in English, the if you help a child onto the back of a horse, you give them a hand up, a leg up, hips to it, we call it, for their credit card systems to circumvent Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Diners Club, and so on. It is the sanctions that have cost Russian oligarchs a class with which Vladimir Putin has always been at some odds. Enormous wealth, but Russia, none. Yet, they have led to Europe facing the most dangerous winter in terms of climate, possibly in its history. And what's very important here is the concept whereby if all of the power, if all of the power in Nigeria was cut tomorrow, nobody would know. Because long ago, they learned to live with no power, to make do. So they're more or less Nigerians, roughly speaking. I don't want to, you know, exaggerate falsely and be unfair. But I have traveled to Nigeria 23 times. So I'm qualified to say this in a diplomatic manner. Nigerians wouldn't know that the power had been cut. They would hardly notice. And the big businesses in Nigeria that run off generators for most of the day would continue to do exactly that. But if you cut the power to Manhattan Island, that place that is more advanced, you know, Americans are sending space rockets, heart transplants, genetic what, atomic theory. That civilization, which is ostensibly superior, would cope less well than a far more primitive civilization. Similarly, Europe without power in 2022-23 is far more vulnerable than Europe with a severe winter in 1750. Because in 1750, those Europeans were more primitive, but like the Nigerians, they figured out how to cope with winter without nuclear power plants.
They had coal and they had wood, right?
And they had warm clothing. And they built with wood, not with concrete, glass, and stainless steel. They built with timber and concrete and rocks and heather and thatch and wattle and daub and so on. They only needed to make a fire this big in a kitchen to heat a, you know, a house completely. And in fact, I don't wish to pretend to be an authority on this matter, but I had a very interesting experience in Germany a few years ago. I stayed in a house that was the house of a water mill, a water-driven mill for grinding cereals, grains, set on a mountain stream. And the old miller's house from the 1600s had a stove, a built-in stove that was located in such a way, and I'm sure many of your European listeners will be hearing this and, you know, thinking it's childlike because they're familiar with it. You know, Europe has all of these ancient things that more modern countries like South Africa and to some extent the USA and others lack, or, you know, don't have quite as much of it. And I was staying with a supporter of Saitlander's mom. He had to go somewhere at short notice. So for the week that I was there, I was hosted by his mom. And she's elderly, and the first morning came, and she readied the fire and what have you, and I was a bit oblivious to what was going on, really. And then on the second morning, I said, I'm really sorry that I failed to offer to help you yesterday morning, but please, let me carry the wood. Where is it? What can I do? How can I help? And so I participated for the next few days. And she put in a few pine cones and a few logs this big. And she'd leave it. And I'd think, heavens above, I'm going to freeze to death. You know, let me shoot upstairs and quickly put on warmer clothing because this woman is obviously trying to save the pennies. And, you know, the house is going to be cold the whole day long and it's snowing outside and everything is iced up and it's the end of the world. Well, in an hour, I was stripping clothing off left, right, and center. So there are rudimentary concepts involved here when we make the wild allegation that this may be the most dangerous winter, speaking climatologically.
Okay, folks, he's talking about the most dangerous winter in Europe, while this is an orchestrated attempt to get World War III off the ground by all sides involved. So we're coming up to the break, folks. Please remember, Revolution Radio is totally listener-supported, so please do send in your donations to Revolution Radio for a happy new year, for all the good karma you can earn for supporting us at Revolution Radio. And you can find me on my BitChute channel primarily. Go to the Brian Ruhe channel. That's R-U-H-E. I'm also on Brighteon. I have a Gab TV Pro channel as well. Go to Gab TV. Look for Brian Ruhe. And I'm on Odyssey. My website is brianruhe.ca. But that's enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think about me? Okay, folks. We're coming up on the breakdown. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire.
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Join me and the Brian Ruhe Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruhe Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back to Revolution Radio, Brian Roos Show, and it is Tuesday, December the 27th, 2022, my last show of this year, and in a few weeks it'll be my fifth anniversary as a host of Revolution Radio. Somehow, I've managed to deal with the fame, and life has been good. Actually, the last 5 years have probably been the best 5 years of my fuzzy little life, so I tell my cat. If you'd like to phone in now, question, comment, statement, you can step on the pages of history, be part of the Brian Roos Show. So here's the phone number right now, 603-635-4946. If you'd like to make a question or a statement. And for the second hour, I'm going to finish off the talk. I was just playing with Simon Roche on America's attacking Russia from within Russian soil. And he's got a good depth and scope and knowledge of the whole Ukraine war and the sense of history about it. And then after that, I'm going to talk about the UFO British Columbia website, since I've been an associate of UFO BC for 5 years. So that's what's on tap for today. So now I'm going to do the share screen and sound again, and continue where we left off with Simon Rush. Here you go, folks. And he's the spokesman for the Saitlanders there in South Africa. And please do donate to Revolution Radio. We're totally listener-supported. So go to freedomslips.com, smash that donate button. You can use Patreon as well. There's many ways to earn good karma to support Revolution Radio.
That all of Europe has ever faced in its history.
Listener supporters, so go to freedomslips.com, smash that donate button. You can use
when the Germans invaded, who knows? There may be better examples. But roughly speaking, this could be a winter to wipe out Europe.
Yeah.
Now, who did that?
Who did that?
It was European leaders. Who does it benefit? Not Europe. It benefits Russia. And this is rudimentary thinking. Nothing that I've said here is at the level of, doctoral thesis level.
But does it benefit the Russian people, or does it benefit the globalists who want to get World War III off the ground? Maybe we'll find out later.
It benefits the globalists. I don't think that it benefits the Russian people as people, except to the extent that some prices in Russia have fallen due to the increased state revenue.
Wow.
Anybody who's been watching the many videos, many, many, many on YouTube and BitChute and Rumble and Vimeo about supermarkets in Russia and daily living in Russia and coping with sanctions in Russia and the price of gas in Russia and the availability of fuel oil in Russia will know that apart from a few exceptions, the average Russian is laughing all the way to the bank, or laughing all the way to a good hot evening meal.
Yeah, but I want to comment on your frustration, which I feel as well, that the mainstream media is telling us, Zelensky's the next Churchill, he's there to save freedom and democracy. I think it raises a fundamental question: is does the truth matter? Like, to you and me, the truth matters, but if 80% of the population believe the media, maybe it's 90%, I don't know, then we're just like this little footnote here. Like, we're like the cattle can stampede all over people like you, me, who tell the truth. But the mainstream media may just decide that Zelensky is going to go down in history like a statue of Winston Churchill, and you and I are just going to sit there and have to take it.
Yeah, that's correct. Brian, if you don't mind, I'm just going to wipe the lens of this camera. I hope that this doesn't seem unbecoming to your audience.
Okay, I can tell a little story while you're doing that. I went to China in January of 2016. I was in Guiyang in the Southwest, and my friend had gas heating in their condo. Nice. So I was there for 10 days. Then I spent 3 days in Shanghai in the north. In my Airbnb hostess, this young Chinese lady said, oh, we don't have gas in northern China because the Chinese government never trusted making a deal with Russia or anybody. So we had this electric heater with this fan, and I was cold, and I caught a cold and a sinus problems. I was there for 3 days, and it was cold because they don't have gas. But maybe now all of northern China will get gas because they're so cozy with Russia now.
Well, we do know that the Russians and the Chinese have signed an agreement to build a pipeline called, I think, I stand to be corrected, the Trans-Mongolia gas pipeline. That's income for the Russians. You know, it only looks good for them. I don't say it's going to end that way. I think there's a lot more water yet to pass under the bridge, that this conflict is going to become far more severe. And the Russians will have their fair share of bad days. But to revert to your previous point, previous but one, yes, we're at best a footnote. And producing videos that get 400 or 4,000 views is almost pointless. But somebody has to record the truth.
That's how I feel exactly.
We need not be noble people. I'm not an especially good man. I'm not, you know, people who know me don't say, oh, golly gee, that Simon. Now, isn't he a fine example of a young Christian conservative fellow?
No one calls me a fine example of a conservative, orthodox, religious Buddhist. I'm just a guy like you, Simon.
Exactly. But somebody has to do this. We can't be complicit to this silence, and we cannot be complicit to this complacency, Brian. It's simply wrong. And I say that as a man who is not a noble man.
No, I often think of it wrong. I think of these prophecies of Nicholas von Weinsberg. I always thought since I met you the historic nature of these videos, that after the dust settles, the northern hemisphere starts to get habitable again. Hopefully these videos will survive somewhere on a hard drive and people say, well, oh my God, that's Simon Roche, he nailed it. And Brian Rue was there to host them. That's perhaps the deepest satisfaction long after we're dead, Simon. That's the way I've been thinking since 2016.
Yeah, you know, Brian, there's another thing worth mentioning on this topic, and that is the similarly, ostensibly, futile efforts made by some people to reveal or expose the truths of the COVID-19 scamdemic and the planned death injections. 2 years ago, it was utterly futile. We were bowled over by deluges of poppycock information. We were lone voices in the wilderness. Not only lone and not only in the wilderness, drowned out by Sahel winds, by Camargue winds. But then there were two of us, and then there were four, and then there were eight. And now there are tens of millions of people across Christendom who know and understand that the injections are pernicious and they are killing at a rate hitherto never seen.
So that's the good news. It did wake some people up. Yay!
2 weeks ago, South Africa's most preeminent private health care scheme, we call it medical aid, but private health insurance, to use a more generic term, is very big in South Africa among wealthy and middle class people. And the flagship of medical aid schemes is called Discovery. And Discovery revealed that over the past 2 years up to Q3 of this year. So the quarter ending September the 30th. There has been a plus 200, over 200% increase in cardiac events among its claims. Well, that is a very, 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 very big thing. 200% increase.
It must be a coincidence, like that sudden adult death syndrome. I mean, what's the explanation for that?
And I can't remember. I think it's called, geez, Brian, I'm not a fundi on these subjects, as we say. Fundi to funda is to read. And therefore, people who can read are called fundis among primitive people in, you know, southern and eastern Africa. So I'm not a fundi on statistics. But if I remember correctly, it's called an 11 sigma event, and its probability is 1 in 800 years. It's meaning that it's practically impossible for it to have been natural. Therefore, it had to have been man-made and deliberate.
Yeah.
And that's great. And similarly, as we endeavored to reveal the fallacy of the COVID narrative and the triple fallacy of the injection narrative, so too we're endeavoring to reveal the fallacy of the narrative pertaining to the Ukraine war. As I said to you in a previous video, I'm not pro-Putin. In fact, if I was a Ukrainian, I would be a neo-Nazi, because I am a sentimental person, and I believe that history, tradition, culture, ethnicity, and love for your antecedents and respect for your antecedents is critical.
But Simon, if you love your people, then you must be a white supremacist, I guess. I mean, hate-filled white supremacist. If you love your own people, what else could it be?
They're mad in the head. Nevertheless, or not nevertheless, and therefore, I can apprehend it. I can clutch it. I can grasp it. When the Ukrainians, who have a strong aversion to Russia by virtue of the Holodomor of 1932 and 1933, in which roughly one-third of the populace was wiped out by the Russian Revolution, saw National Socialism as a savior. There is a famous British series on World War II, which is utterly skewed, obviously. You can just imagine. Called The World at War.
Oh, I saw that when I was 10 years old. Me and my dad would watch The World of the War, and Hitler's up there. He shouldn't stop there. It's like this, and I can never understand. What is he saying? There's no subtitles. Didn't have the money for subtitles? How come I can't understand what the man's saying here?
It was produced by the BBC and published in the early to mid-70s. Narrated by Sir Laurence Olivier. And at one point he describes the German entry into Ukraine. And he says that the Ukrainians brought the traditional offering of bread and salt.
To the Germans.
Exactly.
And they admitted that on World of War.
Yes, they perceived them as saviors from communism. Because when communism was struggling, and there'd been a series of bad crops and this, that, the next thing, the Russians, of course not ethnic Russians as we know, but the Russians, as Alexander Solzhenitsyn said,
from communism.
The hello there, do we have a caller?
A revolution of ethnic Russian.
Do we have a caller in? Hello?
Yeah, I'm called.
Oh, great.
Can you hear me?
Called.
Yeah. When you talked about the Holodome, then I just had to call. Okay.
Very good. I'm glad we're talking about that, though. I can even record this for
like on Skype with Revolution Radio, there's a recording button. If I can find it. Anyways, keep talking. Go ahead.
Well, it was years ago. I found the
recording now. Very good.
Okay, I found the trial transcripts from the Moscow show trials, 1936, 37, 38.
Do you want to see your name, where you're calling from?
I'm calling from Kansas City, Missouri.
Ah.
But it was years ago. I found them on the internet. And I read the transcripts, and they started out, this is Comrade Kaganovich, whatever his name was. He's responsible for the death of all the Ukrainians and the starvation. And then it said, he's an agent of City of London. Okay. It just blew my mind. Are you guys there?
Yeah. I mean, keep talking. This is interesting. I'm here. You know, the Brian Roux Show.
Yeah. I mean, so what I came to understand is that they lie to us about everything. Of course, they've lied to us about Hitler. You know, Hitler's bodyguard and chauffeur was a Jew named Emil Maurice. Okay, well, if Hitler was killing all these Jews, you'd think he'd come home one night and there's Emil Maurice with his machine gun. Why didn't Emil Maurice get mad and say, you know, today my family went up and smoked in the gas chamber, so I think I'll put a few bullets in you. You know, it just doesn't make sense. And then Emil Maurice dated Hitler's niece, Geli Rabal. So if he was so anti-Semitic, why would he allow Emil Maurice to date his niece? Can you guys answer me that?
Yeah, I can answer that. The reason is Hitler was quite fair-minded towards the Jews. I mean, he felt he had a legitimate problem with the Jews. But the Jews within Germany accepted National Socialism. They were part of National Socialism, and he allowed those Jews quite a free rein to be free Jews during his time.
Yeah, I can believe it. And do you know who owned Auschwitz-Birkenau complex? Do you know who the owners were?
No. Did somebody own it? It was a rubber factory, wasn't it?
No, well, Auschwitz was a horrible concentration camp. Birkenau was the work camp. You've heard of the Warburgs?
The Warburg family, Paul Warburg and his brother, yes.
Yeah, Paul, Max, and Felix, they owned Auschwitz. So if there was all this murder going on there, why didn't the Jews go to the Warburgs and say, you know, it's just so terrible, we're going up and smoking those gas chambers. Can you please shut that part of the camp down? So things just don't make sense. When you really dig into it, it's just such a colossal bunch of bullshit. But it's just the other one that really irks me is, you know who Alfred Rosenberg is?
Yeah, he was the ideologue, the intellectual philosopher for the National Socialists.
Right. He was from one of the Baltic countries, Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia. I think it was Latvia. And there was a investigative reporter from Hungary by the name of SZEE. He had one of those weird names. And so he went to Latvia and checked on the family and discovered they were Jewish. Okay, Rosenberg to me is a Jewish name. And they did Yiddish, they did everything Jewish. And so the ideologue for the Nazis was a Jew.
And so you think Hitler was quite fair-minded then?
If you want an interesting read, he has a book called Myths of the 20th Century. And when you read it, your hair will just stand on end because it's got a lot of the Casey stuff where he said in the future, the United States is going to become like the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union is going to become more free, you know, and then he talks about when they flood Europe with all the Africans, how it's going to destroy Western civilization. I mean, it just made my hair stand on end to read it. His first book was on the 100 countries that threw the Jews out of the countries. And then
when was that book written, though? When was it written?
It was written I think in the early 30s.
You say Alfred Rosenberg said that?
Yes. It's in his book, Myth of the 20th Century.
It sounds like Koganov Clergy. That's the kind of thing Koganov Clergy would say. Why would Rosenberg write that?
Well, Clergy was who the industrialists for Germany wanted to take over the Nazi movement, but Rosenberg, you know, he just was exposing. He said, look, when they fled, he said that. He, right in his book, you can read it. I ordered the book on Amazon, and I read into it, and that's what it says in the book. It was like a warning. Here's what's going to happen when they flood Europe with, you know, all these Africans. So, I mean, that's why it just makes your hair stand on end, because yeah. You're reading what's going on right now.
Yeah, I didn't know Rosenberg, he saw that as a danger. So Hitler must have seen the same danger as well.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. So anyway. But I, you know, when you start talking about this stuff, because Stalin is not, and when I figured that out about Stalin, then things made sense, because Stalin didn't make sense to me. And basically what every nation has is a deep state. And Stalin rebelled against his deep state, and he put him on trial. That's what I got from reading those transcripts of those show trials.
Yeah, I think that's about 1948. I think that's when Stalin turned against the Rothschilds, around 1948. And they assassinated him on the term of 1953. He was assassinated and poisoned to death by the Jews.
Right, but the show trials were 36, 37, and 38. And he executed all the Rothschild people he could find back then. And
really?
When you read the transcripts of the, when you read the transcripts of the show trials, it says right at the beginning, this is Comrade so-and-so. He's an agent of City of London, and for that, he's going to pay the price. And that was at the start of all those show trials, but you can't find it now. I found it 10 years ago on the internet, the actual transcripts. Now, when you try and go there, you just get bullshit. You know, you can't find that anymore.
But so I thought the reason really for the generals, I thought he just wanted to consolidate power over the Soviet Union, and the generals were a threat. I thought that's why he killed the generals. I didn't think it had anything to do with the Rothschilds.
It was because they were agents of City of London, according to the trial transcripts from 1936.
Yeah, but what's the truth, though? If Stalin was an agent for the City of London, which he was, he would probably try to hide that by accusing these people of being agents of the City of London when, in fact, they were not.
I think the deal with Stalin was when he saw what they did killing all those Russians, he turned on them. And then he took over from Trotsky, and then he executed all the people that were City of London people, and he was
a nationalist. How do you explain World War II? How do you explain, like, the animating character of World War II is Joseph Stalin, not Hitler. Stalin tried to conquer all of Europe to the Atlantic on June 21st, 1941. Adolf Hitler prevented that with a preemptive strike.
Yeah, right.
So it seems the City of London was in full support of Joseph Stalin throughout the entire war, don't you think?
Well, but what you do you know the website Henry Mackow, M-A-K-O-W?
Yeah, I've gone there in recent weeks.
Have you read
Although he doesn't tell the truth about the Holocaust, and he's a Jew.
I know. Well, but a lot of times I think he does the best he can. He doesn't know. But did you ever read the one on there, Rothschild Conducts Red Symphony? Have you read that?
No, but doesn't Henry Mackow state that Hitler was an agent working for the Rothschilds?
Well, yeah, he does. But again, you know, it's like anything. They're never going to have everything exactly right.
I disagree with them. I disagree with them on that source. A lot of his essays are excellent.
Yeah, I do too. I disagree too, but that article on Rothschild Conducts the Red Symphony, I can't say that last word. To me, that's the most important document of the 20th century, because you get an insight into the thinking of the deep state, the Zionists, the New World Order, because they're explaining in that article on Henry Mackau what their thinking was. Like, they told Stalin that he had to invade, he had to do what he did, or they were going to turn the West against him. And that was from Christian Rakowski, his ambassador to France during interrogation by the NKVD. And it was a Dr. Lewandowski, and it starts out, Dr. Lewandowski says, "This is the kind of bastard I like to interrogate, because these are the kind of people that killed my family." And then they gave him a truth serum, and then he just started, he was trying to save his life, so he was just really revealing everything going on behind the scenes. And to read it, it's just really eye-opening. So it answers a lot of questions, and then it made a lot more sense to me, why we don't get the truth on Stalin.
Yeah, Stalin's a mysterious figure to me, you know. He seemed to start doing good things around 1948. Like he executed the Jewish leadership of Czechoslovakia. Like, what a great guy. So he seems to have turned against the Jews after killing like 40 million people. So it's mysterious to see his good and bad motivations, right?
Well, yeah. I was really amazed to read that article I told you, giving, you know, the fact that the Red Star, the Bolsheviks, stood for the five sons of Ansel Mayer Rothschild. And when I read other stuff, there was a lot that bared out that article, because when the Tsar and the royal family of the Tsar were in Yekaterinburg, Russia, okay, and you had the Red Army that was in there, and then the white army or whatever, the anti-Bolsheviks, who were funded by J.P. Morgan, because that's how they work. They always control both sides. They were getting ready to come in and take Yekaterinburg, and the guard for the royal family, his name was Yazov or some name like that, He tried to directly get a hold of Rothschild to find out what to do with the royal family of Russia. And he couldn't get through, so he sent wires to Jacob Schiff, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and he said, "Look, we can't hold this place. What do we do with the royal family?" And Jacob Schiff wired back, "Kill him." And so when he got the message, he said, huh?
So it was Jacob Schiff who made the decision.
When he got the message, when Yazov got the message, he thought, well, he just means the father and son. So he sent a wire back to Jacob Schiff and said, "You mean just the father and son?" And Jacob Schiff wired back and said, "No, kill them all." Okay.
Oh,
so
I didn't know that.
This guard, yes, huh?
Said, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then those telegraphs were uncovered in France in the 1920s. Okay. And who read them was Henry Ford. And that was the basis of Henry Ford's, "We got a real problem with these Jews." Okay. And him, you know, opening his paper, the Dearborn Telegraph, or whatever the name of it was. He started realizing when he read those telegraphs.
I know Trotsky wasn't there when they made the decision, but I think Lenin was there making the decision to execute the royal family. But you're saying Lenin is just taking orders from above, from the Rothschilds.
Well,
yeah, Jacob Schiff was an agent of the Rothschilds.
Yeah, it was a case where he couldn't get a hold of maybe Lenin or Trotsky, whoever. He had to go because he was in a time constraint.
Yeah,
and then
the White Army was coming to rescue them. So people can understand this. The White Army is coming to rescue the royal family. So the choice to either kill them or what, or they might get away.
Yeah. 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 So anyway, that was one of the things. I forget where I read that. I think that was maybe Henry Mackau again. It's been some years ago, but I have a pretty good memory on all this stuff.
Yeah, it's important history. It's a fascinating history, the Russian Revolution. I mean, communism killed about 130 million people in the 20th century.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's bad stuff. But yeah, Hitler, they really don't tell you about Hitler. Have you read Don Miguel Serrano's Hitler, the Ultimate Avatar?
I read part of it. Like, just today I resigned as president of the Thule Society, but I've got the best post on there is Carl Jung's analysis of Adolf Hitler. And we quote it from Miguel Serrano's book. Miguel Serrano was quoting Carl Jung.
Yeah.
So people can see that on ThuleSociety.com. Yeah, that's brilliant, isn't it?
Well, what I know a lot more about him simply because, are you familiar with Kundalini Yoga, Chakra Dhyana? Do you know what that is? Have you ever heard of it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a Buddhist, but I know a bit about certainly the chakras and Kundalini, yeah.
Well, I do that twice a day, and I've been doing it for 10 years. And what you're doing when you do that is you're basically taking in Holy Spirit, quantum mechanical energy. And if you're an RH negative like I am, then your third eye works, your telepathy kicks in, and you start having people talking to you. Then people don't realize above your crown chakra is the matrix. It's, you know, like black or whatever. And then above that, you've got three more chakras. And there's a technique that someone showed me where when you get to your third eye chakra, rather than going up to your crown, go above the matrix and make noise on those chakras and then bring the information down. And I've been doing that for years, and you get all this information. And for a long time, it just didn't make sense to me because, you know, I was asleep like everybody else, and I go, God, this stuff just can't be true. But a lot of it was on Hitler. And the reason it was on Hitler was, in my case, I went to a past life hypnotist and got hypnotized. And what she did is she had me in my in my house, and she said, go to your bedroom and look at this wall. Do you have a door on that wall? I go, no. And she said, imagine a door, open the door. Do you see steps going down? And so I do, and then there's another door, and I open the door, and I'm in Munich in the 1930s, okay? And I look down at my shoes, and they're women's shoes. It says, look at your shoes, and they were women's shoes. I, what the hell's going on? I'm seeing all these 1930s cars, and it turns out that I was a Nazi wife, okay, in the 1930s.
That's great. That's wonderful. I was there, well, too. I was in the Luftwaffe.
Oh, you were? Okay, well, great. How'd you find out? Did you go to a past life hypnotist?
Well, it was 10 years ago this month. I did past life regression with hypnosis with my girlfriend. It turns out she was my daughter in National Socialist Germany. We all died towards the end of the war, so she remembers me being in the Luftwaffe.
Okay. Wow, that's cool. Well, mine, okay, where I ended up going was Berchtesgaden, when during the Anschluss, where part of Czechoslovakia went to Germany, and I'm out on this balcony kind of overlooking the mountains, and I'm talking to Himmler, I'm talking to Goebbels, and then I go in Hitler's bedroom, I'm looking around the bedroom, and then so I looked online, I saw pictures, and it was exactly what I saw. So that's why I get a lot on Hitler, because I was there, and that's probably why you kind of know, too, that we just get bullshit when it comes to him.
Well, it's so great to have you on the Brian Ruse Show. How did you think to call? Like, I usually ask people the first and the second hour. You call in the middle of the second hour, so I'm so glad you phoned in.
Well, it's the first time I've listened to it, and I like shows where I can call in because I can give a lot of information that you do not get anywhere because I downloaded it, you know, from above the veil. So when I get that information, and it's always been proven to be spot on, and, you know, but a lot of places when you tell them what you get, they can't believe it. They go, God, that's just too crazy because we're all brainwashed.
Well, I encourage you to call in. Like, you can call back in future shows, because I don't get enough callers. So feel free to call back again. Do you want to tell your name for the audience?
Yeah, it's Brian.
Well, I'm Brian. Holy smokes. Brian in Kansas City, Missouri, right? You're in Missouri?
Yeah, I'm in Kansas City, Missouri. So where are you at?
I'm in Vancouver, Canada, but my successor is in Kansas. Jeff Doherty lives in Kansas. He took over today as my successor, president of the Thule Society, so he's closer to you.
Okay, where at in Kansas? I'm just curious.
I don't know. I don't remember. It's a big state.
Okay, well.
Yeah, I'm in Canada, near Seattle, the West Coast.
Okay, well, anyway, yeah. Yeah, so I'll call in. Now that I know Tuesdays I can call in and talk, I can just yak because, you know, I have a lot to say.
It's best to call right at the beginning of the first hour or the second hour. I take a minute in there to see if anyone's calling at that time. It was just lucky when you called now, I just happened to be looking at the screen. If I wasn't looking at the screen, I wouldn't have even noticed that you called.
Yeah, okay. Well, you caught me right away.
Yeah, I caught you right away.
Anyway.
So I merged the call. But, any feature and talk, just try to call the beginning of the first hour, the beginning of the second hour. But, yeah, I'd love to have you talk, you know.
Okay, well, great. Thank you, and thanks for letting me talk. So it was a joy.
Well, I did it because your name's Brian.
There you go. Okay, well, I'll let you go, and I'll listen online. Okay.
Thanks, Brian. Talk to you again. Thanks for joining me.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Bye. So that was nice. Thank you, Brian. Give me something to think about, a bit more to think about the mysteries of Joseph Stalin, World War II, Adolf Hitler. Now he's a big interest of mine. So, boys, I saw the screen share, Adonai. So I will continue with Simon Rush, where we left off, folks.
It was fomented by outsiders. Nevertheless, the Ukrainians perceived it to be Russian.
Boys, I saw the screen share, Adonai.
1932-33. And the concept of the kulak was almost universal in Ukraine. The idea that every man who had an acre, by outsiders, nevertheless, was able to take care of himself and earn money. An acre, 10 acres, I don't know what was the word is called a hide. The traditional English word for the size of a piece of land which enabled a free family, so a non-serf family, a free family anywhere in Europe. The English word is hide. But it was a feudal concept whereby a free family could be self-sustaining. Now, depending upon topography, climate, soil quality, access to water, and so on, the size of a hide differed from roughly 60 acres to roughly 100 acres. In Ukraine, a man's hide could be whatever it was, perhaps 10 acres, I don't know, or 20 or 50 or 90 or 1,000 or a million or a billion, it didn't matter. The point was that across the length and the breadth of Ukraine, there was this phenomenon whereby the peasant class was tantamount to a kulak. That is to say, you are a peasant, but you are not a dog poor peasant. Imagine if there were in India 10 million Dalits, the untouchables, who by dint of whatever, maybe they discovered a seam of gold, maybe whatever, but these Dalits were wealthier than the people of superior, what do you call it?
The caste
system.
Caste.
In India, caste. Yeah. And that was a prevalent concept in Ukraine. The idea that ordinary people were not starving when Russia was, that they were somehow able to insulate themselves from the revolution, And therefore, they were recalcitrant. They were perceived by the center of gravity, that is to say, Moscow and the party, to be recalcitrant. They didn't like the yoke on their neck, like a child who refuses to do his studies, a recalcitrant child, like a child who refuses to obey his parents, like a child who refuses to adopt good manners and good behavior and so on, a recalcitrant child. The Ukrainians were deemed recalcitrant. So 1932 and 33, Stalin did something that had a twofold purpose. The something that he did was he took the grain crop at the end of the barrel of a gun from Ukraine, and he starved the Ukrainians. Between 7 and 10 million died. It was a phenomenally wicked thing. And therefore, the twofold purpose was, one, to bring the Ukrainians to their knees, two, to feed the rest of starving Russia, because communist policies had led to enormous failure, crop failures. So I've said this, I'm saying this now for probably the umpteenth time in this series of interviews with you. I'm neither pro-Russian nor pro-Ukrainian. On the one hand, and we speak now prima facie, superficially, I can recognize the validity of Vladimir Putin's actions. Does that mean I think he's the goodie? No, man, for pity's sake.
No, he's not.
Similarly, I can understand why the Ukrainians are neo-Nazis. I would be too. If those swine Russians had starved half of my family to death just three generations ago.
Yeah.
Just three generations ago. Not even four full generations ago. Three and a half generations ago.
It's still living memory for some people, yeah.
Yeah. So does that mean that I think the Ukrainians are the goodies? Just, you know? No, it doesn't.
So I'll ask you later.
I understand the logic. I can understand the reasoning of a guy saying, if I'm going to fight with Russia, I'm going to do it in the name of National Socialism, with all of the symbols and the marks and the motifs. I'm going to swear an oath.
Oh, I would never do that.
Fatherland. I'm going to Sich Heil, whatever. I say, yeah, I understand that. I would do the same. If your motive was an eternal hatred for the people who imposed, it's minimum 7 million.
We have 8 to 10 million, probably, yeah. No one knows.
Yeah. So, yeah, Brian.
I want to ask you, do you want to get late at some point to the Sinner's prediction of World War III? Because there's always new viewers, never heard of Nicholas von Rheinsberg before. They have no context to the prophecies of World War III. Maybe cover that a bit to let them know?
As you know, I'm loquacious and verbose, and therefore I've used up...
Your voice is almost gone, right?
Exactly. But as I was telling you earlier, I reviewed a document that I haven't read for years. And so if you would like to do an interview next week sometime, as you know, I don't work on Friday nights and Saturdays. Everybody accuses me of being a Jew. It's absolute flaming nonsense.
They accuse you of being a Jew on Saturdays. You're going to the synagogue.
Oh,
is that Jan Laprick? Is Jan Laprick still posting on his website calling you a Jew and your kids? He still has your kids on his website, perhaps?
There are many, many. When I say many, I don't mean in percentage terms. I'm not saying that half or even 10% or even 1% of white South Africans observe the Sabbath on a Saturday. But when I say many, I mean that I know in my personal circles at least a dozen families that do it. It's kind of ultra-conservative people in South Africa. It is a kind of a thing. And I've been doing it for just about 30 years. I think 29 years now. I started
doing what?
Observing the Sabbath on a Saturday rather than a Sunday. So
you're,
my point
you're
is,
a Christian, right? You're a Christian.
Yeah. I'm a normal Christian. But there are many ultra-conservative South African Christians who observe the Sabbath on a Saturday. We just do.
I didn't know that. You mean you got church on Sunday and you have the Jewish Sabbath on Saturday and you recognize that?
It's not the Jewish Shabbos. For us, it's the Bible said Saturday. Okay, we do Saturday.
Okay, because it's in the Christian Bible. It's a Christian concept for you.
This thing of the Sabbath, why? I was just saying, I mean, it's childlike, Brian. It's not, it stymies me that people, I don't know, honestly, I feel like I'm talking to a world of imbeciles. It's a common or garden thing. It so happens that amongst the ultra-conservatives of South Africa, there are numerous people who somehow got it into their heads. Idiots that we are. I know, we're inferior. But the fact remains, people got it into their heads that the original injunction to remember the Sabbath day, not forget it. Don't get mixed up. Don't get muddled up. Don't think that you put it under the couch when, in fact, you put it on the kitchen counter. Remember it for what it is. The right day, the right reason, the right way, etc. It's just one of those things. My own personal experience, if people are flaming interested in something as I don't know, this subject makes me angry, I spent 2 years hitchhiking through Africa. One day, as I was on the road out southwards, the road may run due east or due west, but it's the road towards South Africa as opposed to Cairo, from the town of Lilongwe in Malawi. A guy stopped next to me and he said, "That forest that you see ahead of you is famously inhabited by bandits." A white boy on his own with a nice backpack and whatever valuables you have in there is going, "You tonight, you will be killed." He said, "Please, please trust me. I come from a very, very good family. Just trust me to take you to my home so that my mom and dad can put you up for the night."
Well, that was good of him. Holy smokes.
Right. So I stayed for a few days with this family in Lilongwe. It was the family of Mr. George. I can hardly believe that I have to justify myself like this. The family of George Enoch Moffat Bunda. For all the Satan worshippers who need to hear these details before they'll believe that I'm not a Jew. Why was his name George Enoch Moffat Bunda? Because he was an orphan and he was adopted by a white woman. And he was very young, so she gave him his names, except the surname. Very Christian, conservative family. I stayed with them for a few days. One day I wandered through the town and I landed up at a public library and I found a book on a shelf and I read this book and it spoke about the Sabbath. And I said, "That sounds good to me." So for 30 years, practically, I've kept it on a Saturday. And the long and the short, ooh, I want to scream. I'm so angry right now. You have no idea. Ooh. And all I was trying to say is that I'd love to continue this interview with this stuff that I was researching this afternoon, which we haven't been able to get to because I've spoken at too great length on other subjects. But I can't do it on Friday night. Sunday is Christmas Day. I don't celebrate Christmas Day. I don't have my children with me. It's a bit of a miserable day for me. But I'm going to spend it with friends, and I'd rather not do an interview. On Monday, I am indeed doing a huge interview. Therefore, all I was trying to say that has now precipitated this long-winded explanation for how I'm not a Jew just because I keep the Sabbath on Saturday, as so many South African conservatives do.
But don't you think the reason why people call you a Jew is because you're the spokesman for the Satanists, and they just love to insult you, right?
That's the genuine reason. I know that. I know. And we know that they're agents. We know that this one is connected to the Dykes. Anybody who knows the Dykes, the Max Dykes, the guys who helped the Zimbabwean government to perpetrate the Gukurahundi. When they wiped out with the assistance of the Dykes, and North Korean, what was it, 5th Brigade, to kill the recalcitrant Matabele in western Zimbabwe. We know the intelligence connections of these guys. We know that they're agents. Anyway, so my point is, and I'm trying my very damnedest to remain calm, is that I'm willing and able to do an interview.
So do you want to have any closing remarks for the audience about the prophecies of World War III and Turkey antagonizing Russia going through Turkey and World War III?
Oh, no, Brian, you know very well that would be another hour and a half.
Yeah.
All I'll say is that, as I said earlier, I stumbled across this document, which is sort of a collation of salient prophecies by Sina von Rendsburg. Something I haven't read for years in preparation for today's show. I had a look at it and I was reminded of things that I'd forgotten. And it's absolutely fascinating. All of them. I'll give you one example and then I'm going to go because I've already started cooking my food. Just before her death in 1981, Sina, which means seer as in prophet, Sina von Rendsburg's daughter, Anna, made an interesting remark. She said she remembered her father saying, "The country which will win the war in the far future," meaning World War III. Those of you who've watched the interviews that Brian Ruhr and I have done over years will know that Sina von Rendsburg made a prophecy of three world wars 100 years ago, prior to the beginning of World War I. And so the war of the far future, World War III, the country which will win the war in the far future. Before I complete the sentence, this is translated directly from Afrikaans and tenses the work differently. And as a native English speaker, sometimes I struggle with them. This Sina once made the following remark to a friend of his called Boy. He said, "Boy, you have already stood in the open when a heavy shower comes down." Now, in English, that's an untrue, it's a non-idiomatic translation. You have already stood in the open when a heavy shower comes down. Nobody says that in English, but that's the direct translation. So similarly, we go back to this original thing. The country which will win the war in the future must have Germany as an ally. Doesn't mean that one country will win World War III. It means any country, because the definite article in idiomatic Afrikaans works differently. Any country that would wish to be on the side of the victors in World War III should possess one criteria for choosing sides. And that is, whichever side Germany is on, they must be allies of that side. That is the idiomatic rendering of that. So, on the 5th of January next year, I have, I think, about 15 salient verses on Sina von Rendsburg's explicit references to the precipitation and prosecution of World War III, many of which I have never discussed with Brian Rue.
Well, good. That'll be the basis of our next talk then. And we really accomplished the talk today about the ongoing threats against Russia, which will act out this role everyone's playing to try to get World War III off the ground so it can depopulate the planet, kill billions of people. That's what they want to do, right?
Yeah. Yes, part of a 2,000-year-old plan written in black and white. You can believe it or not, as you see best fit. But if you're willing to do the research, you will find that there is no fib in that sentence. It is part of a plan written in black and white that is 2,000 years old.
Yeah, and you know, since those Georgia Guidestones were taken down a few months ago, gee, you know, we need to have something in black and white. It's not in stone anymore, I suppose. Well, yeah. Thank you, Simon. I appreciate your knowledge. I appreciate all
It's my pleasure, Brian. Thank you for having Cyclunders on your show. You are our most long-standing friend in the media, and we are not oblivious to the meaning and significance of that.
And ask the audience, please do donate to Cyclunders. You can donate to Brian Rose's show too, but the Cyclunders really need it. Every penny goes to good karma. So thank you kindly, Simon.
All right. Fixed up. Cheers, Brian.
Right.
Bye-bye.
So that was Simon Roche, fans. Perfect timing. We're down to our last minute. So you can see that on my BitChute channel, also my Brighton channel, my Odyssey channel, and I'm soon going to load it by tomorrow on my Gab TV channel. So thanks for listening to Brian Roche show, folks. I'll be back next year in January. We'll be back. So be well, happy, and peaceful, and Happy New Year. And don't forget my birthday, New Year's Eve. Happy New Year, folks. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Feel that things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.